This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long in studio at 545 will be our triple option feature. A little after 420, we'll have on with us Will Guillory, who covers the NBA and the Pelicans. And if you wanted to see the tale of two teams last night, man, unbelievable. The Spurs jump out in a big lead over the Pels, and then they couldn't hit. You couldn't throw a rock in the ocean. I mean, they were awful. And the Pelicans came back, pulled away, had a big win last night over San Antonio. So we'll talk to Will about that. In the 5 o'clock hour, I did a mock draft actually Saturday after I got back from Mad Hatter's. And I want to thank Joey and Gwen that did a fine just a super job of setting everything up for Mad Hatters. It was just a great ride, and I know Bobby and I, Mike Hoss, our wives, we all enjoyed the ride, and so great seeing everyone along the route. So when I got back then, I couldn't fall asleep. So I actually did the mock draft, and it's up on WWLradio.com if you want to see it on both X and also on Facebook. Charlie also has his mock draft that we're going to go through. So we'll do that from 5:10 to 5:45, and then it'll be triple option. Then Joe DeLeon will join Steve at 6:25 talking about the NFL Combine tonight, the Matt McMahon Show. Charlie, some additions to the Saints coaching staff. One of them, man, I haven't seen him in a while, but Louisiana guy and Terry Joseph, who's been added as the defensive passing game coordinator. He was that along with the secondary coach for University of Texas. And he's bounced around, certainly, the college football world at Notre Dame, Texas A&M, Nebraska, Tennessee, Louisiana Tech. For a stretch, he was a GA at LSU. And then before that, he got his start. He went back at Archbishop Shaw, I think from 99, I think it's 2002. And then for a couple years at Destrehan High School, he was the coach there. Outstanding baseball player at Northwestern State, and got drafted by the Cubs in 1995, played a couple seasons, got into the coaching ranks, and he's got a couple cousins that have made it pretty well there. Mickey Joseph is now the head coach at Grambling State, and certainly Vance Joseph, another cousin of him, is a defensive coordinator with the Broncos. So Terry Joseph comes in, joins the Saints assistant ranks, and we'll see if that's not a split role, which I think will be the case. I think you'll see two guys coaching the secondary, but one of them will be Terry Joseph. And then Kyle Wilbur, who, man, I remember scouting him when he came out of Wake Forest, a linebacker there, got picked in the fourth round in 2012 by the Cowboys, spent six seasons there, and then four seasons with the then Oakland Raiders, and then became Las Vegas Raiders. He got coached in the Cowboys in the special teams ranks by Rich Bisacci. Rich was a former, the interim head coach of the Raiders. And when Rich was in Dallas, he had Kyle Wilbur. And then he becomes a free agent, and the Raiders sign him because of his connections to Rich Bisacci. And then Rich became the Packers special teams coach in 2023, and he hired Kyle Wilbur to be a special teams quality control coach. And now he joins the Saints to team up with Phil Galliano as the special teams guy. And, Rich Bisacci, for a lot of people here, they remember his time at Ole Miss. He was actually Deuce McAllister's running backs coach at Ole Miss. And I've heard a lot of stories from Deuce about Rich and Rich about Deuce. So Kyle Wilbur will be an assistant special teams coach, and Terry Joseph, the defensive passing game coordinator for the secondary. And I think, Charlie, that will be another addition in the secondary to help coach.
Yeah, I imagine so. Real quick with Kyle Wilbur, Rich Bisacci, Mike, he should have become the Raiders full-time head coach after that stint where he was the interim, and they make the playoffs, they lose close to Joe Burrow, and then they end up moving on from him. He goes to Green Bay, and this is where the connection with Wilbur comes in, because Wilbur played with the Raiders from 2018 through 2021.
And actually played for Rich in Dallas,
right,
when he was there.
From 2012 through 2017, so all about connections with the Green Bay Packers as a coach from 2023 to the present as a special teams quality control coach. So now he's kind of giving that little bit of a boost to the assistant special teams coach. Another really young guy on this staff, Mike, kind of continuing that movement.
35 years old.
Exactly. He had a 10-year NFL career. He's been an assistant coach for back-to-back seasons, and now he's kind of getting that step up to assistant special teams coach.
And Terry's the old man of the bunch. I think he's 51 or 52, somewhere in that
Terry
range.
And Joel Thomas, the running backs coach, they're both like early 50s. I think Joel is 50 and Terry is 51. Okay. So, yeah.
I knew he was in that range.
They're the quote-unquote old pops of this group. Yeah. I mean, Kellen Moore is just assembling a very young assistant coaching staff, but a lot of very exciting names. Terry Joseph as well. When Tom Pelissero had initially reported that addition, he talked about Kyle Hamilton, who plays for the Ravens right now, someone that Terry Joseph had recruited to Notre Dame when he was with the Notre Dame assistant coaching staff. And then most recently, a guy that we're going to talk about next hour, Mike, Jahdae Barron, who was, you know, the nation's best DB this past year. So he recruited him and developed him at Texas as well.
Yeah, I had a texter say, you know, why they hiring a college coach? And my is, man, look who he's coaching. He ain't coaching just college players. These guys are playing in the NFL. And so I think it was a great addition bringing in Terry Joseph to the lineup. And again, relationship with younger players. And also, too, he had an eye for talent. Remember, he's been in the college ranks. He can give you another opinion on the top defensive backs in college football, because when you're at Notre Dame and you're at Texas, you know, guess who you're recruiting? You're recruiting the top defensive backs in the country.
And, I mean, he worked with some of them, as I mentioned, with Kyle Hamilton and then also Jahdae Barron. So it's going to be interesting to see what those two bring to the Saints assistant coaching staff. But as I mentioned, man, it's a youth movement in New Orleans, and I definitely appreciate that.
The other thing, too, is you want to try to get everything together, and we'll have a lot of coverage of it throughout the week and also next week with the Combine starting up. Thursday is when the first sort of running and lifting and everything else doesn't tell you a damn thing about football, to be honest with you. It tells you about what type of athlete you are. And the most important thing that come out of the combine is the one-on-one interviews that you do with the coaches and executives in the NFL, and how much you love football, how much it means to you, and also the medicals. And it happens every year. We see two or three guys that we didn't know maybe the seriousness of it, and it comes out that maybe the injury they have is a little bit more serious than we thought. We saw it last year with Newton, the defensive tackle, and he had the Jones surgery. We sort of knew a little bit about Kool-Aid with the foot injury that he was going to have surgery. And I think because of both surgeries, they dropped out of round one, both of them, along with Cooper DeJean, who had a fractured leg. And so medicals do play a difference in where you get selected in the draft. And sometimes even for injuries, you feel this guy could come back from pretty quickly. It does have a negative effect. So we're going to see what happens to Elijah Aurora, who's already pulled out. He's not doing any of the drills. And also Josh Simmons from Ohio State, who's had a series of knee injuries, and he'll have to get that checked out.
And it feels like this year's cornerback class is the one specifically where there's some big-time prospects with major
Benjamin
injuries.
Morrison.
Siobhan Revelle.
Yeah.
For East Carolina.
Got hurt early, too.
Will Johnson, like, not necessarily as serious as, like, the hip injury from Morrison and the ACL from Revelle. It feels like there's a couple of these top prospects from that cornerback room where, you know, maybe.
Because if they were healthy, Charlie, it'd be first-round.
First-round picks for sure. But neither of them are. And so the medicals are going to be the big question with some of these guys.
No question. It happens every year. And again, this is something I learned years ago, and it's from Jim Finks. And he told me, Mike, don't fall in love with the athlete.
Fall
in love with the football player. And he was absolutely right about it. But sometimes with coaches and executives, they ain't not watching these guys on Saturdays. They got other things to do, and they fall in love with the athlete. That's why guys get picked earlier than where they should and don't turn out to be as good as they should. When we come back, we'll have on with us Will Guillory, who covers the NBA and the Pelicans, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long in studio. And again, we'll tell everybody a little after 5 o'clock today, Charlie and I will go through our mock first round draft, where we'll give our opinions early on. Pre-combine, and normally it really doesn't change much. There's always a player or two that might make a little bit of a run. And then again, the medicals part, Charlie and I will do that at 5:10. On our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, we have on with us Will Guillory, who covers the NBA and the Pelicans. Will, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. And, man, what a crazy damn game last night was between the Pelicans and the Spurs. Man, I was watching us. Oh, God, here we go again. With the Spurs, I actually flipped it off. I had the sound off, and then all of a sudden I turned, and man, the Pelicans got a big lead. And it was a crazy game where, man, the Spurs, they couldn't hit the ocean if they had a rock on their hands in the beach.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was kind of flipped, because in the first half, the Pelicans were the team that couldn't score. They ended up with like 14 points in the second quarter. It was rough for a good little while, especially, you know, during the minutes when Zion Williamson's been on the bench. That's been the story the past few weeks, is they've looked really good when he's been out there, and it's kind of, you know, falling apart when he sat, and that was the case in the first half. And then in the second half, I think what really flipped it was the bench. You know, Jose Alvarado came in and played some huge minutes with his pace and his disruptiveness. The rookie, Carlo Mackovich, had a career-high 19 points, scored 12 points in the fourth quarter. So, yeah, I think that was a really good showing for them, get some of the young guys involved and get a good win in front of the home crowd. Yeah, I think they needed that kind of energy, you know, heading into Mardi Gras a few days.
No question about it, Will. There was so much talk right before the trade deadline of, man, you know, they might move Jose. And my thing is, what, for second-round picks? Man, let him keep that second-round picks. Man, I want him on my team because he becomes the jumper cable guy. You know, if I need a spark – He can jump my battery off, and that's what he's done for this basketball team. And why deal him away for second round picks? You know what you got in Alvarado, and I think last night was a great example of that.
No, I think you're 100% right, man. I think his energy is so crucial for this team. You could just feel the game just shift whenever he checks into the game, because he, you know, he does so much with the way he pressures the ball, the way he get them to play faster on offense. You can feel the crowd really get into it when he starts hitting threes and starts chirping a little bit with the other team's point guard. Man, I think they just love having him out there. And I think the great thing with him, you've really seen the development from him this year as a real point guard, right? Making those decisions, running the offense, making sure Zion gets the ball in the right spot. So I think you really seen him grow up this season, especially, you know, since DeJounte Murray has gone down and they've really needed that presence. I think he stepped up big time, and I think you're 100% right, man. I think the energy he brings, not just on the court, but in the locker room, is just a huge part of this team's identity. It'd be crazy to deal him away.
Well, you had a great tweet last night about Kelly Olynyk, and when he grabbed his 14th rebound, he finished with 15, but that was the most that he had had in a single game since April of 2021. Mike and I, when we had broken down kind of the return for the Brandon Ingram trade, obviously the first-round pick in 2026 is kind of the key there, but Bruce Brown and Kelly Olynyk, we kind of thought that, you know, and Bruce Brown's been a little bit disappointing early on. He hasn't really found a shot with the Pelicans just yet, but Kelly Olynyk, with a great performance last night with getting the start, finished with a plus 21, plus minus 14 points, 15 boards. And, you know, Antonio Daniels keeps mentioning this on the broadcast that he's a very smart player. He knows where to pass the ball every single time. He's a great passing big as well, but also the rebounding effort, had a lot of great second chance buckets and stuff like that. And just Kelly Olynyk's performance last night.
No, I think he's been a great addition, man. And I think you already hear people with the team talking about he's stepping up, you know, pretty much from day one since he got into the building, you know, speaking up during practices and on the court telling guys, hey, you need to be here, you need to be there, we need to space it a little bit better. Because, you know, they're, as of late, you know, even before they got Kelly, they started playing these double big lineups with two centers and Zion Williamson out there to kind of help with their struggles on the boards. And you saw, you know, they were amazing on the boards last night. They were a plus 25, I think, you know, and rebounds last night, and I think Kelly Olynyk obviously is a big part of that. But I think, you know, he's just so different from the bigs that Zion has played with throughout his career. You know, you think a lot about a lot of these big bulky bigs they've put next to Z, like Jonas Valanciunas or Steven Adams or Derek Favors in year one, and Olynyk is much more of a finesse guy. He can space it out to the three-point line. He's had several seasons in his career where he's 4 or 5 assists per game. So he's a guy who can play out on the floor, can move the ball, can make nice passes. And I think, you know, that's a really nice fit next to Z as a guy who just knows how to play, knows how to space the floor. They can kind of go back and forth, posting up, you know, attacking mismatches. So I think he's been a really great addition. And just having that IQ in the lineup has really helped, you know, just getting the ball into the right places at the right time.
Carlo Makovic, last night, I want to put that on the highlight reel, because if I ever become a free agent, man, I want other teams to see that. It was his career high of 19 points, but also along with Alvarado, he was the spark for this basketball team. And yeah, you've seen his growth, Will, and talk a little bit about it to the audience, about his growth as a player overall.
Yeah, it's been great to see, because, you know, this is a guy who's been waiting for his opportunity for a long time, right? They drafted him a few years ago as kind of a Euro drafted stash guy. They drafted him. He spent the year in Europe. They brought him over. He spent a little time in the G League. He's, you know, spent a whole lot of time on the bench this year. And I think, you know, there's been a lot of belief in his talents, you know, in the building. They really believe in, I mean, you see it on the court. He's a guy who can spread it to the three-point line. He can finish around the basket. He can move his feet. But I think it was just, you know, him getting used to the NBA game, the speed, knowing where to be. You know, things move so fast when you're not used to being out there and not used to playing at this level. But I think you just see the comfort and his confidence growing lately, and now he's really able to show all the things he can do. And I think, like I said, with these double big lineups, you see the versatility and how much it's helping having guys like a Kelly Olynyk or a Carlo Makovic who can play multiple positions and who are comfortable moving around different spots on the court. I think it's really, you know, diversified this offense, and I think it's really helped Zion, where he's not being asked so much to do, you know, spend so much time in the paint, you know, protecting the rim or grabbing rebounds. They have those guys out there, and Z can really focus on his offense. And I think, you know, Carlo's growth has been huge, along with Eve Nisi as well, having two young rookie centers, you know, getting time, especially during the second half of the season, and really growing. I think that's going to be, you know, important for this team looking forward, just to have those additional young pieces on the roster.
Well, looking a little bit ahead, the Pelicans have another matchup against the Spurs. And just from last night's game, where, you know, the Spurs get out to that good start, and as you guys mentioned, you know, that second half, the Pelicans just throttled them. I mean, they went on a 67-32 run to finish that game. And I know the Spurs offense just went dormant. Ice cold was the term that was used multiple times, but they couldn't find anything. But the Pelicans also offensively were taking advantage of a lot of those misses, getting down the court and just hooping. I mean, it was a really nice second half performance from this team. And you got to hope that they'll be carrying that momentum into tomorrow night's matchup as well.
No, you're 100% right. I think the big thing for them is carrying over what they did in the second half, was just playing with pace, playing fast, getting into your sets early, not, you know, playing so much one on everybody, you know, with Zion, right? Whenever it feels like when they're playing these half-court possessions, they kind of give it the Z and just hope he can weave his way through two or three guys and get a bucket. But I think when they're playing faster, that opens up, you know, Trey Murphy getting more opportunities from three, or Jordan Hawkins getting just more opportunities from the outside rather than relying so much on getting into the paint. And a big part of that is, you know, getting stops on a defensive end like they were, right? And I think you got to limit De'Aaron Fox. Obviously, he's explosive at the point guard position. But once you take the ball out of his hands, I think you're forcing those other Spurs guys to hit jumpers. And when they're missing, you're seeing the long rebounds. Last night, Jose Alvarado had 9 rebounds because he's out there grabbing a long rebound and he's off to the races. And I think that's what you want to see more of, that them playing fast and continue to get better on the boards. You know, they're bottom two in defensive rebounding, you know, most of the season. And you know, ever since they've been playing these double bigs, the rebounding rate has gone way, way up. And if you continue to do that, you're just giving more opportunities to these, you know, offensive players you got in with the Pelicans. So that's the two big things you want to see, is them continue to rebound the ball and then just get out and run.
Will, take the Celtics off the board, Oklahoma City. Is the most impressive number three team, the Cavaliers, that you've seen so far? Because, man, they have sort of set this up that, you know, all chips in, and we're going to try to see if maybe we can catch a series where we can beat the Celtics and maybe get to the finals. Would that be your number three team right now?
Oh, yeah, I think it's no doubt. I think they're just, their cohesiveness and their chemistry is just at a different level. I think probably the Thunder and the Celtics are the only team that can really compare to what the Cavs are doing. Just the ability to kind of read each other's minds when they're out there on the court, and you see the experience they've had. And I think, you know, it's really a credit to them kind of sticking to what they've been doing. Because over the past couple of years, you've heard multiple times people talk about, hey, can they make this Mobley and Jared Allen thing work? Can they have these two smaller guards in the backcourt? Do they need to break this thing up? They ended up firing the head coach after last season, and I think you see them sticking with it the way they have and allowing these guys to learn each other and grow and, you know, bump their head a little bit in the playoffs, and you see they just come out better from it. You know, Donovan Mitchell's playing great this year. Darius Garland is having a career year. Evan Mobley has made such a huge jump, might have a chance to win a Defensive Player of the Year. I think, you know, they can play so many styles. They can play big. They can play small. They shoot 100 threes. It's just so difficult to limit them, you know, in half-court offense especially. And I think what's big for them also now is that they've added a DeAndre Hunter, a bigger body on the wing to come off the bench. Javonte Green, you know, they just got from the New Orleans Pelicans as a buyout. So now they got some of these wings to contest with a Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown in a potential playoff series. So, yeah, I think, man, that Eastern Conference playoffs is going to be a bloodbath between those two teams. And you got the – I mean, it's just a lot of great teams out there. And you also got the Knicks, even though they're struggling against great teams. I think, you know, Jalen Brunson in the playoffs is always dangerous. So I think it's going to be a lot to contend with out there in the East. And then, you know, you always got the Miami Heat lurking, even if they come in as
– Never count it out. Charlie?
Never, ever count them out.
So, Will, we talked about the Spurs matchup tomorrow. I want to get your thoughts on the Phoenix Suns. We talked with Nick Friedell last week about them. And, I mean, they picked up a win over the weekend. They beat the Bulls. Clap, everybody. But 2-8 in their last 10 since the start of February. I mean, this is a team that's kind of collapsed a little bit. They're now 27-30. They're out of the play-in tournament in the Western Conference right now. A team with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. And it just feels like, you know, as far as the disappointing teams in the West, they got to be up there right now. And the Pelicans catching them at a good time when they're really slumping. Their only two wins, Will, since the start of February, where it was an overtime victory against Utah. And then, as I mentioned, that game on Saturday against the Chicago Bulls. Outside of that, they've picked up losses to teams like Toronto. Now, they've picked up some bad losses, or losses to good teams like Denver and Memphis and Houston. But back-to-back losses against Portland, it's a team that's slumping, and the Pelicans are going to catch them at the right time.
I mean, yeah, you call it one of the more disappointing teams in the West. I think they have a chance to go down as one of the most disappointing teams in NBA history. When you consider just how all in they are, they're more all in than any team I can remember in a long time. I mean, they traded all of their picks to go get Kevin Durant, along with Mikal Bridges, along with Cam Johnson, and whatever, you know, little stuff they had left, they went out and got Bradley Beal to add to that piece. And you know, they're way over the second apron. They're extremely expensive. They don't have any future draft picks. and you're sitting there as like the 11th seed. I mean, we've seen teams go all in like this, and you know, maybe they're a 5 seed, and you're losing the first round, and you feel disappointed. This team might not even make the playoffs. You got Kevin Durant and Devin Booker over there, two future Hall of Famers, two dudes who won a gold medal last summer. I mean, it's crazy to see how much they've struggled, and just like the lack of, you know, any idea how they can get out of this, because they're so, you know, deep in the hole, and with the second apron, it limits what you're able to do. So it's crazy kind of seeing them struggle the way they have, and I don't really know what you can do to fix it, you know, during this season. I think, you know, when we think about the Pels going against them, obviously it's always about Devin Booker, and, you know, keeping him below 50 points, you know, would help. You know, he's had a few different times where he's dropped 50 on the Pels, so as long as you can keep him under control a little bit, that'll help. But yeah, I mean, this Phoenix team is going to be fascinating to see just how much they can try to salvage this thing, and if they can't, you know, how those personalities respond in the locker room and what happens next.
Will, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. I got to tell you this. Listen, it's difficult when you got a team that's not winning. You got to cover them every day, because it's almost like you're writing the same book, in the same page in the book every day. But, man, you do one hell of a job, and I wanted to tell you that. I know how difficult it is when you're dealing sometimes with a team that you know is not going to win many games, but you always keep us greatly informed.
Thanks, Will.
No, man, I really appreciate it, man. I'll come on whenever you guys want me to.
Thanks so much. Will Guillory does a great job covering the NBA and also the New Orleans Pelicans. Come back right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. More sports talk. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelier along with Charlie Long. And bad news coming out of Texas A&M, and that their preseason All-American, and he was either a first-team or a second-team preseason All-American. He was the SEC Freshman of the Year last year, Gavin Gerhovic. He is out for the season with a shoulder injury. So Gavin is lost with the Aggies. This was a team absolutely loaded across the board. And now it's being reported that even Kendall Rogers, I see, has it out there that he will miss the remainder of the season with a shoulder injury. So, Charlie, that's a big loss for the Aggies.
It's a big loss for the Aggies. It's terrible news for college baseball fans. Gavin Gerhovac is a stud, Mike. And we talked with Joe Healy a couple weeks ago about kind of previewing the SEC. When he mentioned A&M, who was the preseason number one team, they're still the number one team in the country. He mentioned them as the one team on paper without any holes. And, of course, Jayce Laviolette is going to be, you know, the number one prospect out of college baseball for the 2025 MLB draft and all that good stuff. But Gerhovac was one of those pieces, those key kind of pieces of the Texas A&M machine, so to speak, that when you were previewing them as a roster, he was one of those dogs that they have. So the fact that he's gone for the season and it's been like 2 weeks into it, Mike.
Yow.
Yeah, that's tough, man. And they also recently picked up a loss to Cal Poly. So all the people that were freaking out about LSU's loss to Omaha in that game too.
Come on,
relax.
It's a long season.
It's college baseball. It happens. You know, these upsets will happen from time to time.
Yeah.
But with Gerhovac being out for the season, as I mentioned, you know, not just bad for A&M fans, it's bad for college baseball fans in general. Mike, he is a solid, solid player. And he was poised to have a huge season for the Aggies. So, you know, speedy recovery to him. I don't know if he's a draft-eligible sophomore. I think he'll be back next season for them regardless. So at least they've got that. But, yeah, that's terrible news.
They got a good NIL pipeline, too.
Yeah, I think so as well.
Yeah, it might be pretty good. Want to mention, too, congratulations to LSU women's basketball coach Kim Mulkey putting up that 750th win yesterday. And, boy, that was one whale of a game to watch as they beat Kentucky, who was 14th ranked, and they beat them 65-58 yesterday afternoon. And, man, that was a give-and-take game between both the Lady Tigers and also the Wildcats. And, again, talk about the SEC, and we've mentioned it so many times about how tough the SEC is in baseball and also certainly in football. Charlie is getting to be that way in women's college basketball, too. You look at South Carolina and LSU, but Kentucky, man, they're starting to piece something together there also to make a run at this. A very, very talented Wildcat team. And I know Kim Mulkey talked about it after the game of, hey, in the SEC, this is really – really difficult when you're talking about going up against these type teams each and every time you get out on the court.
And, Mike, with Notre Dame losing this past week, now Texas has leapfrogged them to number one.
Guess where they in.
Yeah, exactly, the SEC. So, as you mentioned, and it just feels like on the hardwood, the SEC has made major strides.
Major.
Like, especially men's basketball, it felt like for a long time it was kind of the ACC and Big 12 dominated men's hoops. You know, a little bit further back, like the Big East, obviously, we all remember that. But more recently, the SEC has kind of surged, and they've kind of matched, if not even surpassed, the ACC this year. And the Big 12 is kind of having a down year this year, Mike. Like, they've got a couple squads. I watched Houston play Iowa State this past weekend. I'm like, yeah, those are two good teams. But then, you know, you watch Florida play, you watch Alabama play, you watch Auburn play, and it just feels like they're a step above.
Yeah, no question about it. Also, too, with Coach Mulkey, thinking back, and she's told this story, came on a number of times with us, and told story about she really didn't want to get into coaching. And it was the president of Louisiana Tech at that time, Dr. F.J. Taylor, who talked her into coaching. I think he had good career advice at that time for Coach Mulkey, and 750 wins later, that was some pretty good advice for someone who really didn't think about coaching. That wasn't in kind of her thoughts at that particular time, and Dr. Taylor talked her into coaching. So that was pretty good. Every once in a while, it's sort of like Coach O always tells the story about Dwayne Johnson, the Rock. And one time in practice, maybe Dwayne maybe wasn't given maybe the effort. And he talked quite a bit about Coach O Friday night when it was announced that WrestleMania would return. It'll be the third time here in New Orleans next year. And Coach O was on, he used to call him Duty. That was his nickname. He was like, hey, Duty, if you don't want to do this, why don't you go wrestle? And so Coach O was, Mike, I think that was maybe the best career advice I ever gave anybody. Look what's happened to Dwayne Johnson. He got out of football because of the back injury, became a wrestler, and now became certainly one of the superstars of not only wrestling but also in the movie world. We'll be back to finish it off here in our number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870 right after this break. Finishing up here in our number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. We've had some phone issues, so things are somewhat distorted sometimes. That's what we're going through, but I think we got most of it fixed. Charlie, we talked a little bit about it, but certainly, man, to bring crowds to the city, the Super Bowl, we'll do that, Sugar Bowl. But WrestleMania 42, and it was announced Friday night by The Rock, Dwayne Johnson himself, that WrestleMania 42 will take place in the Caesars Superdome. And man, the last time they had that here, good gracious. Man, these streets were flooded with wrestling fans from all over the country, and it may not be as big as it maybe was, let's say 20 years ago. And there were some real big name guys that came out of that particular kind of genre when you're talking about The Rock himself was still there, Triple H. So he wasn't just running it, he was actually wrestling. Stone Cold, Steve Austin, Ric Flair, those guys. But to have it back in New Orleans next year, that is going to be a huge economic boost for the city of New Orleans.
Yeah, didn't you say you went to it the last time it was here, Mike? Yeah. And you said it was a good time?
Man, they had some folks there now. It was absolutely packed. It was a great venue. If you haven't been there, it's really a lot of fun.
I'm not a huge wrestling guy, but I think I might try and see about going to experience the atmosphere.
No, we got to bring Coleman. Coleman's the wrestling guy.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so we got to bring Coleman this year to WrestleMania when it comes in 2026. But certainly a lot of big news. And man, if you talk about stories, the stories that The Rock has about Coach O and Coach O about Dewey, man, he said he never said anything here.
Right.
He said, I couldn't believe it the first time I heard him on the air. I was like, is somebody doing this talking for him? Great stuff. We'll be back with more sports talk here and NFL draft talk right after this break on the Big 870 WWL. Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. Steve Geller will join us at 5:45 for our triple option feature. I got posted this afternoon, but guys asked me to do the pre-combine mock draft, so gave it a shot, and I might change a little bit of it, but basically the combine doesn't really change my mind unless I hear something from a medical standpoint. So we'll kick it off right here. First pick in the draft, Tennessee Titans, and I think either via trade with another team, and that is highly possible, or the team decides to select the quarterback. I'm going with Cam Ward, the quarterback from Miami of Florida.
Mike, the mock draft power hour is underway. I agree with you. This is the first pick that we've got the same of maybe six, I think, is what you counted in our mock draft. We got a lot of differences, but Cam Ward makes the most sense here for Tennessee. I'm forgetting who we had on from the Tennessee Titans radio network, but he also did stuff with the NFL draft. He had come on with us recently and talked about you can't really sell another year of Will Levis to that fan base.
And they're building a new stadium. And it's Amy's sister. She's not going to take that. That's why I think there's a big push here to go ahead and pick Cam Ward. Either that or to make some kind of deal to bring in a veteran quarterback, because Will Levis isn't going to cut it. He's just not going to cut it in Tennessee. He might go somewhere else and do it, but it's not working for the Titans. So we both agree Cam Ward is the pick here. Either the Titans picking him or them dealing back and having some team move up to get him with the first overall pick. With the second pick, Cleveland Browns, I'm going Abdul Carter Jr. It's obvious this offseason they're going to deal off Myles Garrett. And I think they need to fill that void. Abdul Carter last year, in his first year playing defensive end, he had 24 tackles for losses and 12 quarterback sacks, and he played with a bad shoulder for the last three or four games of the year.
You don't need to sell me on Abdul Carter at all. He is a phenomenal, phenomenal athlete. And he was a guy that played off ball for a lot of his collegiate career. He moves onto the line of scrimmage as a full-time edge rusher, and he just terrorized opposing offenses all season long. Now, when we picked Cam Ward as the number one selection, I want to make it clear to everybody, Cam Ward is not the number one player in this draft.
No, and I'm getting to him.
For my number two overall pick, I have the number one player in this draft going. I understand the fit. You know, moving on from Myles Garrett, you need a new premium edge rusher. I understand. But Travis Hunter is that special of a player. And I think he's still that. He's getting kind of shoved down by a lot of people, Mike. A lot of people that think that Abdul Carter is the best player in this draft. I still think it's Travis Hunter. I have the Cleveland Browns taking Travis Hunter as the number two overall selection. So, but I understand the fit. It makes a ton of sense. Abdul Carter is an unbelievable athlete. And, you know, the comps to Micah Parsons, I think, are real, Mike. I don't think it's just because
he's a
bigger
Penn
version. State, you know, connection there. But, man, he is an impressive, impressive athlete.
With the third pick in the draft, the Giants, I'm going to go with my top-ranked player in the draft, and that's Travis Hunter, who will start immediately at corner. And you build a package where he's going to play 13, 17 plays a game. On offense, and just think, you'll have Malik Nabers on one side and Travis Hunter on the other side. Pick where you want to kind of double team on that, but I'm going to go with pick three for me, Travis Hunter, the cornerback, wide receiver, Colorado, and he is my highest rated player.
And the Giants desperately need corner, so it makes all the sense in the world. But I have them going Shedeur Sanders, the quarterback from Colorado, and the only reason being, you know, from what I've read recently from Giants reporters, that they still want a quarterback at the third overall selection. Now, do they value Shedeur that highly? I understand getting a veteran, but they still might draft a quarterback. Like, they might have a bring in a rookie QB and have him sit behind, you know, the buzz about Matt Stafford. I remember a few months ago was the buzz about Derek Carr, right? You know, they could still go out and get themselves a veteran quarterback, but I think with the third overall selection, they might also want to address the future of that position. Because they're picking that high. Now, it's not the greatest quarterback class, so this is a little bit of an overdraft for me with Shedeur at number three overall, but that's the only reason I did it. Otherwise, I would have been taking one of Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter here, but I have them taking Colorado quarterback Shedeur Sanders.
With the fourth pick for me, New England Patriots, I know who's the head coach, and Mike Vrabel, and he's always pushed defense, Mason Graham, the big nose guard from Michigan. I think when you run that type defense – in which Mike's going to want to run in New England, you need a guy in the middle to occupy blockers, to make a big push inside. Mason Graham's that. So, you know, when I think about my top three players is Travis Hunter, It's Abdul Carter Jr. and it's Mason Graham. It wasn't any quarterback, but I think Mason Graham goes four here to the Patriots.
And you made a great point about interior presence on the defensive line. Think of what, you know, Coach Vrabel had in Tennessee with Jeffrey Simmons and what he did for that defense. I understand the selection, but there is one player that's a little bit rated a little bit higher on the board for me here, and that's Abdul Carter. So I still have them going defense like you do. And Mike, this is a little bit of a bigger conversation, but I see a lot of mocks, and I mean a lot of mocks, that say that Will Campbell is going to be the selection here at number four for the New England Patriots. I don't know if I see it. And the reason being, as you mentioned, Mike Vrabel is kind of a defensive guy. Like, he's going to want to build the trenches, I understand. And they have a huge need at offensive line, but their defensive line also needs a ton of help too. And when you have, you know, the blue chip prospects in this class that we've talked a lot about, Mike, where it's Travis Hunter, it's Abdul Carter, it's Mason Graham, and then there's a drop off. You want to secure one of those pieces, I think, if you're the New England Patriots. And for me, Abdul Carter's the highest one on the board. For you at that point, Mason Graham's the highest one on the board because Abdul went earlier. So they're going to get a stud defensive lineman either way.
The fifth pick with Jacksonville Jaguars, I'm going to go with Jalen Walker, who played linebacker, but I think he'll be a hybrid player, 3-4 outside linebacker, but also can put his hand in the dirt and rush as a 4-3 defensive end. Jaguars have always sort of went toward, you know, bigger name schools for players. And you know what? They get almost a top pick every year.
Yep.
So I'll go with Jalen Walker, the outside linebacker defensive end from Georgia.
So this is where I have Mason Graham going. And this is one of my favorite picks in my mock. Just a perfect fit, a perfect need on the defensive line. And when you go into next year with Mason Graham and with Trevon Walker and with, you know, Josh Hines-Allen, that is a very, very scary trio of defensive linemen. Now, it's a good core to build around. The Jaguars still need a lot, but I definitely like that selection. And once again, kind of taking the best player available, these guys fall to picks 4 and 5 because I had the Giants taking Shedeur Sanders and overdrafting a quarterback with the 3rd overall pick.
At 6, Las Vegas Raiders, and I'm going to go with Shedeur Sanders here. He worked out with Tom Brady in the offseason. Brady knows a lot about him. He's going to have a tremendous amount of say on who the Raiders pick, and so I'm going to go with the quarterback here, and Shedeur Sanders going to the Las Vegas Raiders.
And I think this is where an interesting conversation gets brought up, where if you're the Cleveland Browns and the Las Vegas Raiders call you to trade up to number 2 because they want Shedeur Sanders, the Browns have to at least entertain the notion of moving down to pick 6 and adding some extra draft capital as well. Vegas is obviously desperate for a quarterback, just like some of these other teams in the top 10, but it makes all the sense in the world, the connection that you had mentioned with Tom Brady that Shedeur Sanders has, for the Vegas Raiders to move up from pick 6 to pick 2 and select their quarterback of the future with Shedeur Sanders. We'll see if it happens, but if I'm Cleveland, I would severely think about doing that, moving down a couple spots and still being able to get a solid player in the top 6 of this draft. But because I don't have them doing that, and I have Shedeur Sanders off the board at that point, I have them taking a player that I think, Mike, maybe is the biggest gap between the two of us of where we have them going. Teddaroa McMillan, the wide receiver from Arizona. You know, Travis Hunter's kind of cornerback one, wide receiver one in this draft. But if you're not counting Travis Hunter and saying that he's a full-time corner, I think Tet McMillan's wide receiver one. I don't think it's a gigantic gap from him to wide receiver two, but just the size, you know, he projects as a prototypical X receiver, and I like Jakobi Meyers a lot, Mike, but it feels like, you know, maybe the Raiders offense, even if they go out and get a veteran, they're still kind of missing that top dog wide receiver. I think Tet McMillan could provide them that.
At 7, the Jets, they need something to spark them on offense, and I went with Ashton Jeanty, the halfback from Boise State. Man, Ashton, he's got a great blend of field vision and strength in the lower body. He's got the speed to turn the corner. He's also an excellent receiver coming out of the backfield. And Breece Hall's just not been the same guy since the injury. So I'm going with Jeanty here to the Jets at 7.
Jeanty is a plug-and-play, changer offense type of guy. And for those that think, oh, 7's too big to take a running back, just look at this draft. Like, Mike, you and I agree that the top 10 or so picks, there's some really stout players here. But then outside of that, you get to 11 to 20, and then there's a little bit of a gap. And then after that, you have 20, 21 first-round grades in this draft. you just want to snag the best player available regardless of position. So while, yes, typically seven would be a little bit rich for taking a running back, Ginty is an offense-changing weapon, and I like the pick. But you put this one in my head, Mike, and I can't get it out. I got them going Will Johnson, the cornerback from Michigan.
Yeah, it was – I juggled that.
So Will Johnson's a really interesting prospect. He had the injury this year. He didn't play much for Michigan. But something about what you mentioned with Aaron Glenn, a former Jets DB, taking a stellar stud DB with his first-round pick as the head coach of the Jets, I like that a lot.
With the eighth pick, Carolina Panthers, they could use a lot, especially on the defensive side of the football. I'm going to go with Mikael Williams, the defensive end from Georgia. Mikael was bothered by an ankle injury this year, but in watching him and breaking down tape, it's his explosiveness, his ability to get off the line of scrimmage in pursuit, and also he is a really good edge pass rusher. The Panthers need that to try to jumpstart defense. Because they do have some pieces on the offensive side that works for him. But I'm going to go with Mikael Williams, the defensive end from Georgia.
I've got the similar position, but I'm going with my edge two, and that is Marshall Edge, Mike Green. Saw a lot of this guy at Marshall this past year in the Sun Belt, and I just, you know, watching him terrorize my Cajuns in the Sun Belt Championship game. 17 sacks led the FBS this past year. Mike, you've also talked about his improvement as a run defender, how teams just ran opposite of him. He's a guy that commands a lot of attention from opposing offensive coordinators. And right off the bat, I think that improves Carolina's defense significantly. They address the edge position. They get Marshall Edge, Mike Green at pick eight.
At pick nine, and this is where the Saints come into play. And, man, I would have thought about either one of those two Georgia pass rushers. They really need a nose. And I don't think you pick Kenneth Grant here. I think he's – if you maybe trade back a little bit, Kenneth Grant comes into play. I'm going to go with a big man playmaker, Tyler Warren, tight end, Penn State.
I love it. I mean, similar to what I mentioned with Ashton Ginty about changing your offense with one player, Tyler Warren's that type of impact from the tight end position. And we've been begging, Mike, for years now for them to address the tight end spot. And they finally get it with someone like Tyler Warren. I have them taking, and I was back and forth on this one too, Mike, because I loved Warren here, Missouri right tackle Armon Membu. And it goes back to the stat that I read from Hayden Winks of Underdog Fantasy. Armon Membu's pressure rate allowed against top 50 prospects Jalen Walker, Mikael Williams, who are both already off your board in the top 10, James Pierce Jr., Shamar Stewart, Nick Skorton, Donovan Ezeraku, and Jack Sawyer, who all of which could be first-round picks, 2.7%. You have your franchise left tackle with Taliese Fuaga. Go get your franchise right tackle. And kind of follow, I guess, the same mold as, you know, what the Chargers are doing, where, you know, they found their franchise left tackle right off the bat, and then they bring in Joe Walt, and now, you know, they have one of the best tackle tandems in the entire NFL. That's kind of what I'm looking to do here. You know, Will Campbell was also an option. I like Will a lot. However, I'm not sure if you would, like, if the Saints were to draft Will Campbell, do they shift, you know, Fuaga back over to right tackle and play Will Campbell at left?
Or, man, I don't like swinging.
No, I don't either. I don't either. And so do you move Will inside? A lot of draft experts have him potentially as a guard at the next level.
He's going to play tackle.
I think so as well. So, but left tackle is already figured out for the Saints with Fuaga. So I have them addressing right tackle, getting Armon Membu. And Mike, you and I agree, Will Campbell, Membu, it's like a 1-2. It's pretty close.
It's going to be a lot closer than people think.
It's really close. And then there's a little bit of a gap after that. So, but I have them addressing the right tackle position, and then you have your tackle set for the next decade.
Think about Tyler Warren playing on a team that's really not, you know, noted for throwing the football. He caught 104 passes last year for over 1,200 yards, 8 touchdowns for Penn State. And basically every time he got off the line of scrimmage, they were bracketing him. I mean, he didn't see double coverage, but he saw a lot of bracket over and under. So, man, if you get a shot, and this is a really rich draft class with defensive linemen, I think you can come back in round two and get you a big defensive nose guard. And if you're going to run that 3-4 defense, is what they're talking about, then you need that guy that can sit over to the center. We'll be back and finish out here round one of our 2025 mock right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. We're going through round one as far as we can get today. We might get to 18 in round one, and we just finished with the Saints. I had Tyler Warren, tight end from Penn State. Charlie selected Oman Minbu, the offensive right tackle from Missouri. With the 10th pick in the draft, Chicago Bears, they need help up front, left tackle. And LSU has not had an offensive lineman selected in round one. You got to go back to Alan Faneca, who's in Pro Football's Hall of Fame back in 1998. He was the last one selected in round one. I'm going Will Campbell, left tackle, LSU.
This is our second pick that fits, Mike. I got Will Campbell as well. This one makes tons of sense. I mean, they need their franchise left tackle, you know, the blindside protector for Caleb Williams. And, you know, they could go defensive line here as well. They need help on the edge there. But just drafting, you know, the one of the top two tackles in this draft class at number 10, I think makes a ton of sense.
At 11, San Francisco 49ers, they have not addressed this area in quite some time with a first-round pick. And I'm going to go with Will Johnson, the cornerback from Michigan. I think he's a top 10 type player.
Yep.
The hip injury with him and lower body injuries with him has sort of got him on a little bit of a track back. But, man, for the 49ers, they need cover people. Will Johnson, cornerback, Michigan.
Number 11 feels like the floor for Will Johnson, Mike. If he falls outside the top 10, San Francisco's not letting him fall past 11. So I like the pick a bunch. I have him going at pick 7 to the Jets, though. So I have the 49ers going best defensive player available at this spot. Kenneth Grant, the defensive tackle from Michigan, who, Mike, you know, we'll talk with Joe DeLeon later on in the show about this. If you want to talk about guys that can make a real impact at the combine, just what Kenneth Grant can do athletically for at that size, I think a lot of teams are going to value this dude.
Yeah, Kenneth is a freak of nature as far as a 350-pound man that can run like he can. And, boy, to think that Michigan had him and Mason Graham in the middle.
Great, pretty impressive.
Great. Jay in the morning. With the 12th pick in the draft, Dallas Cowboys. I know Jerry always talks about skill players, and I almost went with Tet McMillan here. But he talks so much about winning up front. Oman Minbu, offensive tackle, Missouri, who could project to either tackle or guard. And look who they just lost last week to retirement, Zach Martin.
Yep.
And so that's my pick, Cowboys. Oman Minbu, offensive lineman, Missouri.
Cowboys desperately need to upgrade their running game. I have them taking Ashton Jeanty, the running back from Boise State. He falls outside of the top 10. Similar situation with, you know, if Will Johnson's there at pick 11, that's the floor for him for the 49ers. This feels like the floor for Ashton Jeanty. If he's there at pick 12, I love the pick for the Dallas Cowboys, who desperately need to upgrade their run game. As you mentioned, you know, getting beefier up front, that makes a bunch of sense too. But at this point, both Armon Membu and Will Campbell are off the board, so I have them selecting Ashton Jeanty, the running back from Boise State.
At 13, Miami Dolphins, they need a big man up front. You don't know how much longer Teron Armstead's going to play NFL football. He's had certainly a series of injuries, not only with the Dolphins, but when he was here in New Orleans. I'm going to go with Kelvin Banks, Jr., the offensive tackle from Texas. He has started 42 games for the Longhorns and three-year starter at tackle. Really good run blocker. I mean, he is top of the level as a run blocker. He needs a little bit of work in his pass protection, his setup, and his arm extension, body balance stuff. But I think that he can get better at. So I got the Dolphins going with Kelvin Banks Jr., tackle, Texas.
Kelvin is not much later on my board, Mike. I have them actually addressing the safety position, though, and going Malachi Starks here. I think Javon Holland is probably going to be gone in free agency. Now, if he returns, that's a little bit different. But they address safety, drafting Malachi Starks from Georgia. Do-it-all defensive back that is, you know, not necessarily the master of all, but he's fantastic in almost everything. So, you know, typically you don't see safeties get selected this high, but Malachi Starks, I think, is a special player.
At 14, Indianapolis Colts. Come on, if you spent that much capital on Anthony Richardson, you better put some pieces around him that can make plays. And Colston Loveland from Michigan, the tight end, huge target downfield. He is a top-flight playmaker, stretching the middle of a defense. I'm going to go with Colston Loveland, tight end, Michigan.
You and I have them taking the same position, but the best player available at this spot, Tyler Warren, goes to number 14. And I keep talking about the floor for these players. Tyler Warren's not going past 14. If he's there, the Colts will run this pick up to the board, and they will be ecstatic to do so. But we see it the same. I mean, they both address the tight end spot. I've just got Tyler Warren still on the board here. Colson Loveland will go very shortly for me.
At 15, Atlanta Falcons, they need a pass rusher. He's not the ideal size, height, length, all this. All I know is he makes plays. Mike Green, defensive end, Marshall.
There you go.
Last year, all he did, 84 tackles, 17 quarterback sacks, 22.5 tackles for losses, and he forced 3 fumbles for Marshall. And he was double-teamed on basically every play. If you watch some of the practice sessions he had in Mobile, he was dominant there. Now, again, for some teams who have this certain height, weight, length on a defensive end, he might not fit. All I know is he can play.
So, Mike, you had him going earlier here. I have Jalen Walker going at number 15 to the Atlanta Falcons. You already talked about the speed that this guy possesses. He's a rare athlete. And the Falcons finally addressed the edge position, as they should, but we'll see what happens this year. They like to, you know, throw curveballs at us in the draft. But I've got them taking Jalen Walker as the top defensive player available.
At 16, Arizona Cardinals, Kenneth Grant, defensive tackle from Michigan. He's one of the freak players, or you watch at the combine. He got overshadowed at Michigan because of Mason Graham, no question about it. But if you watch guys that can tie up multiple blockers, he closed down the rushing lanes, and he is a really solid interior pass rusher. He sort of forklifts that center right back into the lap of a quarterback. Cardinals need defense. Kenneth Grant, defensive tackle, Michigan.
I also have the Cardinals taking defensive tackle. I have them taking Walter Nolan, though, because Kenneth Grant was off the board at that point. And, Mike, you have Walter Nolan coming off the board here in just another pick, so we'll talk a little bit more about him. But Walter was someone that, you know, at Texas A&M, very highly touted recruit, one of the best players in the country coming out of high school. But he really kind of broke out this year at Ole Miss. And, Mike, you talked about how, you know, the SEC defensive linemen, there's so many premium guys. But you had to pay attention to Walter Nolan every snap that he was on the field.
He was a tilt-the-field player this year for the Rebels. And so at 17 with the Bengals, I got him going Walter Nolan. Not only is he a really good pass rusher, but he plays the run well. And if anybody needs defense, man, it's the Bengals.
Yes.
They could use it at every position. Tackle, end, linebacker, cornerback, safety, across the board. If Walter Nolan's there at 17, I'll pick him, and I won't hesitate.
You know, it's funny because I saw, like, NFL.com had, like, the position needs for different teams, and for the Bengals, they had, like, wide receiver and tight end. Like, no.
What?
Defense. Defense. Mykel Williams, the best defensive player on the board, the edge from Georgia, goes to them at 17 on my board.
At 18, Seattle Seahawks. Last year, they had trouble protecting from the interior, and, man, they were getting a lot of heavy pressure right up the middle. Tyler Booker, offensive guard, Alabama. Tyler at first started out at left tackle. Then they kicked him inside. Man, he is a big man. That is a really devastating inside player as a run blocker. And he's gotten better in the pass protection part of the game. I'm going to go Tyler Booker, offensive guard, Alabama.
Perfect fit for the Seattle Seahawks. I have them taking Kelvin Banks because he's still here on the board, and I have them shifting him in to guard and playing left guard right off the bat for the Seattle Seahawks squad. As you mentioned, tons of issues. Interior offensive line, they address it in the first round by taking Kelvin Banks from Texas.
Every year there's a player that sort of takes a tumble, and it's not necessarily anything he did wrong. Sometimes it's teams are picking for need, even though they say they don't. They always do. At 19, the Bucks, Tet McMillan, wide receiver from Arizona. That's all they need to team up with Mike Evans there. Let's see what happens with Chris Godwin. They've extended out the time, and they want to do a deal with Godwin. But, if you got Mike Evans and McMillan, good luck trying to match up against those guys. One thing with McMillan, he's not the fastest or the quickest player around. But his timing and leaping skills with the ball in flight, they are at the top rung of the ladder. He just has a way of going up in heavy traffic and coming down with the football. And that's why I think he'd be a great fit here for the Bucks.
It would be jump ball after jump ball from Baker Mayfield throwing to Mike Evans and Tet McMillan. Just go up and get it, big fellas. I have them taking Emeka Ebuka, the wide receiver from Ohio State, at pick 19, Mike. And this is under the impression that they won't bring back Chris Godwin. They have very similar builds between Ebuka and Chris Godwin. But also, you know, just the craftiness of Ebuka as a NFL route runner, someone that can really plug and play and be a strong weapon right off the bat for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense.
At 20, Denver Broncos, I've heard Sean Payton talk about, I want a joker player. I want a guy that can play multiple positions, either on offense or on defense. So I got him going with Jahde Barron, who played cornerback. He played the nickel, free safety at University of Texas. So that's my pick for the Broncos, Jahde Barron, who, again, he played cornerback, safety, nickel. He fits what you want to call that joker spot.
Denver's biggest need, the tight end vacancy, gets filled with Colston Loveland, the tight end from Michigan, at pick number 20 for me, Mike. It's a perfect fit offensively for what they're trying to build around Bo Nix, adding a premium pass catcher at the position there. I love that selection. I feel like it's a great fit. If he were to fall there to pick 20, Denver, this feels like, you know, someone that they would run up to the board and go get. Colston Loveland goes at pick 20 for me.
We're going to go to... I think we'll go to 22, and then we'll kill it. Okay. 21, Pittsburgh Steelers, Luther Burden, the third, one of the most highly recruited high school athletes in the country, decides to stay, plays at Missouri. Didn't have the great year last year. I thought he was good to very good, not great. Part of that, too, is they weren't getting him the ball enough. But, man, he is a playmaker, speedy, so quick into and out of his cuts and his breaks, and he is elusive out into the open field. That's what the Steelers need. They need a playmaker at wide receiver, Luther Burden III.
Agreed. You echo my exact sentiments, Mike. Feels like a great fit once again for Pittsburgh at pick 21. Luther Burden, you know, kind of had a down year in production in 2024 versus what he was able to accomplish in 2023 when he was right up there with, like, Malik Nabers for, you know, great receiving numbers that season. I'm gambling that he is more of that player than he was in 2024, and so give me Luther Burden at pick 21.
At 22, and it'll be the last one we'll do today, and then we'll finish up tomorrow. The Los Angeles Chargers, I thought about a running back. Too high for me to go running back. I went defensive line here. And last year, the Eagles picked a Rocket, Toledo Rocket in round one, and Quinyon Mitchell. This year, the Chargers, Darius Alexander, who can play end and tackle from Toledo. You talk about a guy that's going to wipe out the combine. It's going to be Darius Alexander. And if you watch the practices in the Senior Bowl, he was beating the stew out of everybody. Anybody that lined up against him, he beat them. I'm going to go with Darius Alexander, the defensive lineman from Toledo.
Older prospect as well, Mike. Someone that's a plug-and-play guy, ready to play right off the bat. So that makes a bunch of sense. The Chargers need defensive line help. And I reached here. I mean, I'm kind of like you after watching a little bit more of him. Nick Skorton, the defensive end from Texas A&M. It's almost a little bit similar to Luther Burden, where I'm kind of gambling on the 2023 tape that he had with Purdue, because he wasn't very good this past year at A&M. He came in as one of the highest projected defensive linemen in this class.
He ain't beat nobody this year.
No, he wasn't very good this past year, but I do think that the Chargers take him at pick 22 here as best edge available. Granted, there's a couple edges that I have going later on in this first round that I think could be better than him, including his teammate, who I have going to the Baltimore Ravens, but we'll save that for later.
So that's 1 through 22, and tomorrow we'll finish up round one here. Maybe even give us a shot, maybe what the Saints might do in round two if it goes kind of like we think it'll be planned, and all the names will all be jumbled by then. One trade kind of knocks everything off. We come back, triple option feature, myself along with Charlie and Steve Geller, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTellier along with Steve Geller, Charlie Long. Steve, I'll go to you first in triple option.
Well, gentlemen, if you can't beat them, try to ban them. The NFL Executive Vice President of Football Operations, Troy Vincent, said today that one team has submitted a proposal to ban the play we know as the tush push.
Packers are the one.
There you go. NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero revealed the team is the Green Bay Packers. The play's been effective for the Eagles so much that Jalen Hurts finished for a tie for fifth most rushing touchdowns. That's with 14 this past season. We saw the Eagles pull it off in the Super Bowl as well for a touchdown. Now, many other clubs have attempted to replicate the play, but nobody's done it as well as Philadelphia. Now, the Packers contingent, they have a month to prepare their arguments before the annual league meetings, which will kick off March 30th. I'm interested to see what happens with this. I just would imagine that most teams feel the way I think most fans do, is like, you just got to figure out a way to stop it. You can't just ban the play from the NFL. I don't think it's It's that worthy where you need to make it illegal.
Okay, if it was a advantage just for the Eagles, I understand, but it's not. Anybody can do it. You got to get the right personnel to do it.
I know the Bills do it a little too with Josh Allen.
Bills do it a lot. Yeah. And if I had a 6'5", 250-pound quarterback, I'd do it a lot also. Charlie?
Guys, I'm going with D1 Baseball's most recent top 25 ranking. Okay, the SEC. We talk about how dominant they are all the time, and this proves it. 11 of the top 25 baseball teams in the country from one conference. Texas A&M at number 1, LSU at number 2, Tennessee at number 3, Arkansas at number 4, so they have each of the top 4 teams. Virginia's gotten off to a slow start, by the way, guys. I don't know if you all have realized that. They were like the number 2 team preseason. I think they've fallen. They're off to like a 3-4 start or something like that. At number 6 is Georgia. 8 is Florida. 14, Vanderbilt. 15, Texas. 16, Oklahoma. 18, Mississippi State. And rounding out the top 25 at 24 is Ole Miss. 11 of the top 25 teams in the country early on, guys. And, you know, we talked with Jay a couple weeks ago, and he mentioned it's going to be a gauntlet once again, and it looks like it will be.
Yeah, and that messes with your concentration. That's why every day you better be prepared to see what you get in front of you. I'll answer a couple of the texts. First of all, for 4424, thank you so much. I appreciate the compliment on the articles written on the history of the 10 Super Bowls in New Orleans that I did for Rouse's and in their magazine. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And to get that, and Bob Rossler was the one that actually told Buddy DiLiberto and I this story. He was actually in the room when they were pitching this, and Dave Dixon, who was there, also confirmed it and how they got it. And a lot of it, he doesn't get a lot of recognition for it. Al Hurt. Al was a big part of helping get that Super Bowl to come here in New Orleans. And he said, hey, you bring it here to New Orleans, I'll play for free. NFL's all for free. I mean, they're like everybody else. I'll take that free. Also, we have one of the Texans ask, Mike, any chance that the Saints get Aaron Rodgers? Guys, I'll let y'all answer that.
No.
There ain't no way.
He wants a contender.
Don't be surprised if Matt Stafford starts chasing money.
Oof.
And now his agent's involved in looking around, trying to get him $50 million a year. If he starts chasing money, which I don't think is the greatest idea at his stage in his career, you look at the teams that are after you, the Giants, the Titans. Now, the Steelers got a little bit better talent, but, man, their offensive line isn't great. Man, I think I'd want to stay with the Rams. Who gave the Eagles the toughest time during the playoffs? The Rams.
Right.
Man, they took them to the limit. They really did.
Jalen Carter won that game at the very end, Mike.
At the very end, Jalen made a few plays there. But if somehow, some way, Stafford is dealt, don't be surprised Aaron Rodgers goes out west. Try to make it a 2-year run and try to do this similar to Tom Brady and what he did in Tampa. Man, the Rams got some talent, and now they got a bunch of draft choices to kind of pile up to help him also. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number 2 of Sports Talk on the Big 870 right after this break. We're finishing up here in hour number 2 of Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike to take you along with Steve Geller, Charlie Long. Steve, we got Matt McMahon, the Matt McMahon Show at 7 o'clock. What you got at 6:25? Joe DeLeone, right?
Yeah, going to be talking some NFL draft and also the Combine, obviously, kicking off this weekend. Also hear from head coach Willie Green of the Pelicans at practice today after they beat the Spurs last night. It wasn't pretty, but they got the job done in the second half.
So if you want to see the mock draft, you can go on Twitter, on WWL, and also Facebook, X or Facebook. We got it printed out for you. You can take a look at it. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break.
Welcome on into a Monday edition of Sports Talk. It is February 24th, getting closer to Fat Tuesday next week. Get Lundi Gras coming up a week from today. We got the Matt McMahon Show coming up 7 p.m. this evening, recapping LSU's weekend. Was another tough one for the Tigers. The Pelicans, at least, were a positive last night, coming back for a victory against the San Antonio Spurs. Went into halftime down, was it double digits or 9 points?
Yeah, it was double digits, and then they just blew up in the second half. And the Spurs, man, that was – That was a tanking team, Steve. That's what they looked like in the second half.
Yeah, I don't know if they were trying to miss shots or they were just – it was just an abysmal night for them from the field.
Joel kept saying ice cold, and I think that might even be being nice. Like, they were awful in the second half. And so the Pelicans took advantage, give them credit. They outscored them 67-32 from, like, the 9:44 mark in the third quarter on. So they just annihilated the Spurs past that halfway point.
Yeah, Pels finish with a 114-96 victory over the San Antonio Spurs. They'll see him again. Same bat time, same bat place tomorrow in the Smoothie King Center. We saw Zion Williamson putting up a 22-point performance night. Still under that 30-minute mark, though, Charlie. 28 minutes of play. But, man, oh, man, he's being a heck of a producer when he is on the court. And it was nice to see some of the length in the Pels lineup, getting some rebounds way cleaning the glass better than the Spurs did last night.
Yeah, for the first time, it felt like the Pelicans viciously out-rebounded a team, which was great. It was great to see. Kelly Olynyk grabbed like 15 boards. Even Misi had a career high in 15 boards. Carlo Mackovich was out there grabbing rebounds. He had a big night, too.
Yeah,
career high 19 points. So the Pelicans bigs, you know, no Victor Wembanyama. They took advantage of the Spurs front court without, you know, their star young piece. And you mentioned Zion. So NBA has been kind of covering this. Zion Williamson now weighs in at 264 pounds, the lightest he has weighed since being drafted in 2019 per Mike Wright, who covers the NBA for ESPN. So good for Zion. He's played himself into shape. He looks great. They're still being careful with him. I wouldn't expect him to play the back-to-back that they have coming up very soon against Phoenix
right. When
they play him on Thursday and Friday. But the way Phoenix is playing right now, they might not need him for one of those games.
At least he'll be in action tomorrow night. That's the plan, at least, to take on the Spurs again. Head coach Willie Green spoke at practice today. Let's hear a little bit of what Coach Green had to say to the media. Oh, sorry. I jumped the gun on you, Charlie. We're going to get the audio of Coach Willie Green speaking at Pels practice today as they get ready for the Spurs tomorrow. And then the Pellies going on a four-game Mardi Gras road trip. You're going to have the Phoenix Suns twice, the Utah Jazz, and then it's the L.A. Lakers. We got that Coach Green audio now, so let's hear from him at Pels practice today.
We saw last night where, you know, Trey in the fourth quarter finally got a couple of shots to go. He was kind of like, you know, laughing about it. But how much throughout the years have you seen him kind of improve with just not allowing his whether makes or misses to dictate, you know, how he's playing?
Yeah, that's growth for Trey, is having a next play speed, understanding that teams are, they're going to guard you. They're going to try to close out to the three-point line, make you put the ball on the floor, continue to play through it, make the right plays. His shots will go down. His teammates will find him. I thought that was, even though he didn't have the offensive game that he wanted to have last night against the Spurs, I thought it was a huge step in the right direction.
And just overall, where have you seen Jose kind of improve the most as his role has grown throughout the season?
Jose takes advantage of the opportunity in front of him. We just talked about it. He's playing fast. Defensively, he's picking up full court. He's causing havoc, getting steals and deflections. He's walking on the floor, trying to get his teammates involved. And when he has open opportunities to score, he does it. I thought he played a big role in us in that third and fourth quarter, making a comeback and then pushing forward from there.
Really, over the last month, Zion's numbers per 36 minutes are incredibly similar to Shea, right? He's an MVP candidate. We see what he's doing on the court, but can you describe, like, what else has improved, where he's taken steps forward, like maybe in terms of leadership, especially since some guys have got down?
Yeah, I mean, he's more vocal in the locker room. He's more vocal with his teammates. Him and Daniel Bove are putting in a ton of work behind the scenes, but you know, talking to him the last couple of days, he really wants to take a step defensively in the right direction. And you can see that on the floor. He's really mindful about, you know, switching screens, guarding the ball, finishing possessions. And I think that's another step in the right direction for Z.
And are we going to see a lot more of him guarding point guards, a lot of the quicker guys on the perimeter since you're going to bigger lineups?
Yeah, I think we're going to see him guard, you know, a number of different guys in a number of different positions. And he's more than capable. And so we'll try to put our guys in the best position to be successful, but, you know, normally we're switching screens so you can be on any of these guys. It's really about, you know, knowing our principles, sitting down, guarding, and then our help defense should be ready behind, you know, behind those guys.
Well, what can a game like last night do for a guy like Carlo?
It builds confidence. It builds confidence. It builds momentum. We want to continue to attack every game, even with our young guys playing. We want them playing at a high level. Last night was evident with Carlo, Eve, Jordan Hawkins stepping on the floor, all three of those guys being huge contributors to our win. And now let's see if we can do it again. And that's the consistency part of it that we want to see is you do it one game, can we be greedy and come back and do it again?
Kelvin had minimal practice time before he played his first game. You guys are plus 32 in the two games that he's played. What do you think about just how he's been able to quickly adjust?
Yeah, he's a huge bonus for our group. High IQ. He's big, 7 feet, can stretch the floor, can play with the ball in his hands. Really good passer. And so his feel for the game is really helping our group. We want to continue to explore those options.
Well, is it any easier to kind of carry momentum from this last one when you play the same team in a span of 48 hours?
It can be. And that's the goal for us is, you know, to look forward to getting on the floor and attacking again. They're going to make some adjustments. So we have to be prepared to step on the floor, play our game, and then make adjustments as well. And so it's going to come down to, you know, sticking with our principles, executing on both ends of the floor.
Their main perimeter guys really struggled shooting-wise. How much of it, when you look at the tape, is that you were happy with some of the stuff that you guys did defensively? You feel like that was a big factor?
It is. I think we can get stops, but the finishing possessions are huge for us. You know, close to 70 rebounds. 52 defensive rebounds is evident that we're getting stops, we're contesting shots. Now we're giving ourselves an opportunity to go down and score on them. So much of the same, the next game is what we have to focus on, getting on the floor and executing in those concepts.
And when you get 69 rebounds, I think that's the most this team's had in last five years. Is that like further proof that you should stay big and maybe all this talk of small ball that we've peppered you with last few years, maybe going bigger is probably maybe the right way?
There's times where we need to be bigger on the floor. There's times where, you know, you can be sort of a smaller unit. The goal for us is, though, no matter who steps on the floor, it's bringing a level of toughness and aggressiveness that allows us to play our style of basketball. And there's times that we've been small this season, but we haven't been physical. And so we want to move forward in those directions and make sure we're implementing those concepts.
There are a few numbers floating around now about, you know, how Zion's getting double-teamed way more than just about everybody else in the league. You've seen a lot of great players. How unique is his ability to still get it done with 2-3 guys coming at him every night?
It's incredible. What he's able to do on the floor, even in the limited minutes that he's playing, it's incredible. It's a credit to the work that he's put in to put himself in this position. He's extremely talented. We all know that, but he's also has an extremely high IQ when he's on the floor. So he can attack, get to the basket, and he's also finding his teammates for open looks.
Pelicans head coach Willie Green there, and you heard him talking about the Pel's rebounding advantage last game, and they just waxed the Spurs on the board. It was 69 rebounds to 46. Pretty impressive. But like you mentioned, Charlie, there was no Victor Wembanyama in the mix. So they were without their big man there. But this Pels team has just struggled with rebounding all season long. So maybe they can go more with that big lineup more often if that they're going to get more of those rebounds on the night.
I want to say they started doing it against the Denver Nuggets a couple weeks back, where they started Carlo next to Eve, and it's like the two young guys, and now they have Kelly Olynyk thrown into that mix, who started just this past night against the Spurs. And so Olynyk was really impressive, Steve. I mean, give the guy credit. I wasn't expecting much from him in that trade return for Brandon Ingram.
Boom, double-double last night.
He's been significantly better than Bruce Brown's been early on in a Pelicans uniform. And so Olynyk, he's going to be under contract for next year as well. I think this is kind of his early, you know, showcase of his abilities to the Pelicans that he deserves to be here next year and beyond. And so Kelly Olynyk, off to a great start in his Pelicans career. I think Will Guillory had a great tweet that when he recorded his 14th rebound last night, it was the first time he had that many rebounds since like 2021.
Wow.
And then he finished with 15.
Right.
So great performance by him. Carlo Mackovich, the one shot that he missed, Steve, was like a corner three. But outside of that, 8 of 9. From the floor, and he had a career high in points. He had a great performance last night. It feels like the Pelicans have these young bigs that are really starting to step up, and if they have a more defined role for the future, I think Eve Missy obviously has his defined role as the future five of this team, but we'll see what happens with Carlo, and we'll see how they decide to use, you know, Kelly Olynyk in certain. I think when they added Kelly Olynyk with that trade, they had a vision of him fitting next to Zion. And Will made a great point about this when he was on with us at like 425, that, you know, the fit with Zion next to a spacing five. You know, Kelly Olynyk's not, you know, your typical ground and pound five necessarily. Right. He's more of kind of a high IQ is what we keep hearing from the guy, but you watch him on the floor and it makes all the sense in the world. He's a good fit next to Zion Williamson. So they're kind of getting an early gauge of what he could look like on the court in those types of situations with Zion, but then also those other bigs that you have in the youth movement, right, with Eve and Carlo, and seeing what you have from them for basically the rest of the season.
Yeah, the best case scenario in all this, at least you're getting some of your young talent some extended minutes and the run during this lost season pretty much for the Pelicans this year. And just got to hope everybody like Herb and DeJounte Murray come back healthy next year and we get to see what this roster is truly capable of.
Update from Alec Box Stadium here, Steve. LSU baseball versus Nicholls State. Very intriguing first inning. I've been kind of watching it as we were listening to Willie there. Nicholls jumped on William Schmidt in the first inning. William Schmidt, the highly touted freshman arm that everyone loves to, you know, just ooze about his talent, and he's got the greatest arm talent since, I think, what was it that Ben McDonald said, or that Scott Sanders said, was like since Aaron Nola, and he's got the Ben McDonald comp as well. So he's a fantastic young pitcher. He gets his first start in a Tiger uniform tonight in the midweek against Nicholls, and he starts getting a little bit shaky early on. He gives up two singles back-to-back, first two runners reach, and then an error allows a third runner to reach. I think that might be the first error of the season for LSU. So the bases are loaded with one out for young William Schmidt. Mound visit, gets a sac fly, and then a fielder's choice. So he gets out of it with only one run allowed. So good on you, William Schmidt. I imagine it was Nate Yeske that made that mound visit.
Right.
He got him to calm down a little bit, made some good pitches, got out of it, only allowed one run. Now, the bottom half of the first is also intriguing because, you know, first batter flies out, Derek Curiel strikes out, but then Jared Jones earns a four-pitch walk. A hit by pitch for Josh Pearson puts two on, and then Daniel Dickinson, who's been an RBI machine early on for the Tigers, gets a two-out base hit. And now another walk for Ashton Larson has loaded the bases. So it's a one-to-one game in the bottom of the first with two outs.
We'll be keeping an eye on the Tigers taking on Nicholls tonight, give you some more updates throughout the show. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll be talking about a little bit of the NFL Combine preview with Joe DeLeon, NFL draft and college football analyst for A to Z Sports. So stay right tuned here on WWL. We'll be back after the break. Welcome on back into Sports Talk. Steve Geller and Charlie Long hanging out with you till 7 o'clock. That's when the Matt McMahon show will take over, talking a little NFL Combine right now, though, and to help us break it all down, Joe DeLeon, NFL draft and college football analyst for A to Z Sports, joining us. Joe, how the heck you doing this Monday?
I'm doing great. I'm extremely excited that I'm going to be in Indianapolis later on this week. Can't wait to see these guys test and who's going to possibly rise their stock. Couldn't be more juiced up.
Yeah, looking at, we got some word today of some guys that won't be taking part in any of the drills. I don't think there was any surprise in most of the names you've been hearing about. But curious, Ashton Jeanty, the running back, some of the folks have him in play at number 9 for the Saints with that pick, and it just seems like there's so many other needs for this black and gold squad that using it on a running back, I don't want to say it seems like not a waste, but there are just so many other aspects that they can address, and they've got a guy like Alvin Kamara already on the roster. Do you think Jeanty is worth a 9th overall selection?
I think Jeanty is worth a top 10 pick, but not for the Saints, for what you just talked about. It doesn't make a lot of sense for this team right now that needs to get better and needs to address a best overall player on the board type of approach. And when you're going in that direction, you need to find elite defensive players, defensive tackles, corners, safeties, offensive linemen to continue to shore up your offensive line where they've invested multiple first-round picks over the past few drafts. Taking someone like Ashton Jeanty is a luxury pick. Having a running back, a weapon like Jeanty, is for a team that is a big playmaker away from either getting to the playoffs or a playoff team that is really close to contending for a Super Bowl. We saw that, the best example of how Saquon Barkley is just being wasted away with the New York Giants, and then you put him on the Eagles, and that's how the Eagles win a Super Bowl. So right now, no, it doesn't make sense for the Saints to go in that direction. I would much rather see them maybe grab a guard sitting at that 9th spot if it's Tyler Booker, or if they're going on the defensive side and someone like Will Johnson is still on the board, one of these edge rushers like Michael Williams or Shamar Stewart or James Pierce Jr. still on the board. Those positions are far more valuable for the Saints team turning things around and going in the right direction rather than taking a running back.
Joe, you seem to be really high on the cornerback group this year. And I think, you know, just looking at your big board, I'll kind of break down some of these prospects with you and pick your brain on them. It feels like the corner class this year has a lot of question marks, and not because of play on the field, but more because of injury issues and concerns there. You have Will Johnson at number four on your top 25 big board, the corner from Michigan. He obviously had the issues that limited him this past season. Savon Revell at number seven from ECU, I'm very intrigued by, and I would love to get your thoughts on him. But just a freak athlete, complete freak show, but someone that suffered a torn ACL early this past season. Granted, you know, we'll see what the timeline is for that and his recovery, but, you know, someone that's very intriguing early on in the process. Also, Zaire Thomas at number 10 from Florida State. A lot of corners here, and then also Benjamin Morrison going back to the injury issues, the hip injury that he has, and kind of seeing what that does with him with the combines, with medicals and everything like that. So just want to get your thoughts on these top corners and, you know, some of the guys that have injury issues ahead of this draft.
Yeah, the one thing that I think is always missed with fans and tuning into and tapping into like draft coverage and not understanding why certain guys on a general analyst board is going to be different from how the NFL is going to draft them and how the first round could end up turning out. And it's exactly what you just brought up. I'm allowed to take the risk of projecting a guy's tape that got hurt without really truly factoring in the injury stuff. And an NFL team has to be really careful about that. They have to be really careful about how they approach it. I think all these corners, though, none of these guys are in a position, unless something comes out this week from the medical reporting, none of these guys have any concerns of long-term health issues like degenerative knee issues or anything like that. It's brutal that Revell suffered the ACL that he did. But he still is, as you mentioned, a freak athlete. He is ridiculously fluid for somebody who's 6'3". He is exactly what the NFL covets in corner prospects. And if he didn't get hurt, he probably would have been a top 10 pick in this class. But because he doesn't get to do any of this testing, he's going to get probably pushed to the wayside, and he might end up being a second round pick if the NFL is worried enough. Will Johnson was a little banged up this year, but I don't think for me it's anything that's so serious that it's going to hurt him as a player. What made him so great was not only his length, but it was his decision-making. It was his ability to attack the football in the air and to be aggressive and to know what was happening before it did. That is a rare instinct that he played with. But of all these guys that you just brought up, if I was concerned about the health, the future health for a prospect, it would be Benjamin Morrison, because he's dealing with, he dealt with a hip injury, dealt with a shoulder injury. He is a very light and thin corner prospect. And any time that we have these guys that are thinner prospects and they start getting banged up, it makes you wonder, do they have enough weight? Are they big enough to withstand the hits that a long NFL season is going to do to a player's body? So, if there is one player amongst the group that I really like and I'm really high on that ends up maybe getting held back by injuries, it would probably be Morrison.
When you look at this week coming up in Indianapolis with the drills going on and the teams, you know, scouting stuff for the NFL draft, are there any players you think are going to really thrive in this situation and really jump out with their numbers to start skyrocketing up other teams' draft boards?
Yeah, there's two guys that I think are going to drive a lot of the conversations this week. One is well-known, and I think that the other for the casual NFL fan is not going to be super caught up on. Kenneth Grant from Michigan is a name that has been pushed a lot as a possible top 15 pick. At 340 pounds, he is going to probably run one of the faster times for his physical profile. He's going to test really, really well. And I hope he does test and realizes that this is a huge opportunity for everybody to be freaking out more than what people were doing last year for Tavondre Sweat. I think people are going to be seeing this big dude move and realize that he is a special, special player. The other that I think isn't well known but is known to SEC fans, Nick Emmanuari from South Carolina. He's 6'3", he's 220 pounds, he's built like a linebacker, he flies all over the field like a 5'9". Free safety. He's so fluid, and I think that his testing this week is going to be off the charts. His jumps are going to be great. If he runs faster than a 4.5, which would be ridiculous at his size profile, he should be discussed as a possible top 15 guy in this class. But I don't think I see a lot of people and just fans in general talking much about him. He will be one of those prospects that if we're putting at the top of our board as, hey, this guy made the most money, it's probably going to be Nick Emmanuari.
Sneaking into the back end of your top 25 here, Joe, I want to get your thoughts on, you know, Marion Hampton and also the running back class in general. I'm going to be intrigued to see how, obviously, Ashton Gentry is going to be a first-round pick come April, but, you know, how many running backs actually go in the first round, because it's got so much depth in this class that maybe a lot of these guys will fall into day two, and then you'll really see the run on them from, you know, the second round into the third round, where you might see, like, 10 guys selected because it's so deep. You know, past Marion Hampton, when you have guys like Cam Scadaboo and Dylan Sampson and Caleb Johnson and all these other studs, the two Ohio State boys as well. Just want to get your thoughts on Marion Hampton and then this running back class in general.
Yeah, I think that for what you just described is how this is going to end up panning out. Maybe a second running back like Hampton sneaks into the end of the first round, but more realistically, we're going to probably see a lot of teams being patient, that they've got maybe a guy they feel is specifically perfect for their rushing style and their offensive scheme, that they're just going to wait until day two because they don't want to miss out on these other positions that have a lot more scarcity. Offensive line is a very scarce group this year. There is not a lot of good options on day three. There are a million good options at running back on day three. You could get a starting caliber running back possibly in the fourth round if things bounce your way. I think that with this running back group, that run that will end up happening, like we see a lot of times with deep position groups, will come somewhere in the second round. And especially with a position that is increasing in its value recently in the NFL, is always generally going to get pushed further down on the pecking order of positions to be addressed in any draft class. But Marion Hampton, for me, is that second guy who leads the discussion early because he is just a tank of a runner. He is a great athlete for his profile, for how big he is and just how thick he is. He's not afraid of contact. He's willing to hit guys. He's a pretty good pass protector. He's going to run hard between the tackles. He's got the burst to separate. Hampton has the goods of being a 1,200-yard rusher consistently in the NFL if he ends up in the right offense that gives him the rock as often as he can get.
Talking to Joe DeLeon, NFL draft and college football analyst for A to Z Sports. Taking a look at your top 25 board and noticing, I don't think you're a fan of the offensive tackles in this year's class. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not very juiced up about these offensive linemen. I think that we've got a lot of guys in this class that either are all tools and not enough technique, or all technique and not enough tools. And
okay,
my top 25, it's been pointed out by a lot of LSU fans, because my co-host are Rufino and Joe, the big LSU guys, so he started ragging me on Twitter. Will Campbell was just on the outside of my top 25. And my reasoning is just his floor is phenomenal, and he's my 26th-ranked prospect. But I just would like to put a little bit more stock in some of these guys like Kelvin Banks or Josh Simmons that are better athletes, that I think have a little bit of a higher ceiling. I think Will Campbell goes on to have a really long, amazing career because he's just so steady. But if I were to throw a dart and say Kelvin Banks or Josh Simmons has a slightly better and a more impactful career, I would bet on that because they have the traits that Will Campbell just doesn't have, sadly.
Yeah, it's interesting because I see a lot of mocks that have him going forward to the Patriots. I don't really see it, Joe. I think that the Patriots are going to get one of those top three blue chip prospects with the fourth overall pick because it, you know, a lot of people do have it. And I know that you have Malachi Starks in that conversation as well, but Abdul Carter, Travis Hunter, and Mason Graham are, you know, the kind of the consensus top three players in this draft. And I think that with Tennessee or maybe even Cleveland or even New York selecting a quarterback with a top three pick, it feels like the better pick for the Patriots at pick four would be to take one of those guys.
Yeah, I think that you bring up a really good talking point here with Will Campbell, that he's going to go on to be a great player, but bringing him into the discussion as the fourth overall pick, I'm just not there because you're passing up on these guys that could be all pros and huge, huge difference makers. In order to get somebody who's just a quality, reliable starter. That's where you get guys in the back end of the first round. You're not making that pick You're not making a pick like that in the top four. Tetterell McMillan's like another guy that I always think of in that same conversation that has actually been mocked to the Patriots at fourth overall a ton. And I see a really good second receiver in an offense that needs the attention to go towards a primary guy in order for him to succeed. But if I'm drafting a guy with that type of a profile that is reliant on winning in contested situations, I'm not doing it in the top 10. I'm doing it somewhere in the middle to the back end of the first round.
Joe, I'm curious. I've seen some of the mocks out there coming out. A few have had Penn State tight end Tyler Warren landing with the Saints at that ninth overall selection. How do you like that?
I think that would be a nice, really strong fit, especially, you know, kind of in the past thing with Taysom Hill did, you could get some of that same usage out of Tyler Warren. I think the bigger question is, what is the direction at quarterback for the Saints going forward? Like, is there a faith put into Derek Carr? Do they try and go and acquire somebody else? Do they try to draft one of the guys in this class somewhere on day two? Tyler Warren, to me, is another guy that might end up being a little bit of a luxury pick drafting a tight end when you've got other needs that need to be addressed. But if you don't want to miss out on a player who's a great athlete for a 6'5", 260-pound tight end, who can stretch the field, who can win after the catch, you're going to get a really good player out of Tyler Warren. I just wonder if it's better off that he's on a team that already has a quarterback situation figured out.
Gotcha. Thanks so much for the time, Joe. When are you heading up to Indy?
Oh, I'm getting there on Thursday. Couldn't be more excited.
Awesome, man.
Appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Joe DeLeon, NFL draft and college football analyst for A to Z Sports. Have a good one, Joe.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Joe.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. You can chime in too, 504-260-1870 on our Oakland Hard Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We shall take a break. Be right back with more after this on WWL. Well, that shaky first inning sure woke the Tigers up. LSU baseball now leading Nichols 5-1. We're in the bottom of the third.
Yeah, real quick, Steve. So Kadarin Bidé earns a walk with the bases loaded and two outs. It scores the second run. LSU takes a 2-1 lead. And then the rally, two-out rally continues with Steven Monster Milam hitting a two-run RBI single, and that was the end of the scoring for the first inning. So LSU took a 4-1 lead into the second, where Bear Jones hits a solo shot to make it 5-1. And as far as, you know, William Schmidt on the mound after that kind of shaky first inning, he's now through three innings with zero earned runs.
So it's just needed that little bit of tension to get settled a bit.
Yeah, no, he looks great right now. So we'll see if LSU can hold on to this early 5-1 lead.
We're going
to
check in on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line right now. We got James on the line. What you got today, James? Happy Monday.
Hey, likewise, bro. You guys mentioned Pelissero accusing Green Bay. I got John Sigler, Saints beat writer, accusing Atlanta of committing this crime. And it sounds about right, because it's basically what they're saying in the article is that they're fearing that Kellen Moore is going to take that push, what do you call it?
Tush push, whatever. Yeah. The brotherly shove, tush push, whatever you want.
Yeah, once we draft Tyler Warren, we'll use him for a tush push.
Take that to the Big Easy and win a title. But listen, I want five draft choices to start for us. That guy that other guy that you had on, I mean, he may know about other teams, but we need talent. So I'm with you. I'm with him when he says not a running back, only because in the first round, only because we have nobody to play the 3-4 defense. We have no linebackers that are going to play the 3-4 defense right now. So we do need somebody coming off the edge. But as far as running back is concerned, I'm looking at the guy from Ohio State.
Which one?
From Baton Rouge.
There's two of them.
The guy from Baton Rouge that played ball at Tennessee. We need speed. When we were winning, when we had Reggie Bush, we had speed. We had speed. We had Majoka. We got nothing. So, yeah, give me five starters coming out this draft to justify Nicky still hanging around.
Travion Henderson from Ohio State's the speed back, and then also Dylan Sampson from Tennessee, another speed back. James, to our point from what we were talking about with Joe just now, there's going to be that run in the second and third round on running backs you're going to see like 7 to 10 of them get selected in those two rounds alone. And that's if, you know, Marion Hampton doesn't sneak into the back end of the first round. I'm still kind of, you know, unsure about that. I think he'll probably be a day two pick, and then that will kind of start the run with like Scataboo and Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins and all these other studs at the running back position that will fly off the board. I'm with you. I want the Saints to draft a running back at some point. I'm not taking one at 9. I'm not taking Ashton Jeanty. So, and it's because it's such a deep class and you can get a stud in day two.
And I don't know if Jeanty's a generational type of guy.
I think he's fantastic.
I've heard some comps to LaDainian Tomlinson already. I'm like, whoa,
Mike's
pump the brakes.
Comp is what I see. I love Mike's comp for him. Jamal Charles.
Okay.
Is what he sees from Ashton
That's
Jeanty.
A lot better than saying LaDainian Tomlinson to me.
Right. No, I mean, that's Hall of Famer. Anyway, so I'm with you, James. I'm all for selecting a running back at some point, but not on pick nine, day two, 100%. Now, as far as the 3-4 defense goes, Mike said that he was, you know, if he was there in his mock, Jalen Walker could have been considered for the Saints at pick nine. And he's a 3-4 outside linebacker from Georgia. Now, will he play off ball at the NFL level? Will he play kind of the edge position? We'll kind of have to see. But he's a very fascinating prospect, great speed pass rusher, someone that, you know, when he was let off the chain at Georgia, was just a complete game wrecker. He's got him going to the Jaguars at pick five in his mock. I have him going a little bit later. But at the same time, you know, the way that Mike was talking about him, I could see him potentially being an option if you're looking edge rusher, you know, outside linebacker at pick nine.
Yeah, the Saints situation with, you know, Brandon Staley coming in as defensive coordinator brings a whole bunch of personnel questions, because this is a scheme that this is a huge change, which we haven't seen in New Orleans for a while.
You desperately need a nose tackle now, and I think you can address that in round two, because that's another position that's really loaded in this class, is interior defensive line.
Right.
In my mock, I had Tyleek Williams going at 30 to the Bills, but if he's somehow there at pick 40 for the Saints in round two, that would be an awesome fit as far as just a run-stuffing nose tackle.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk, you can check out Mike Dettillier's mock draft at WWL.com, plus a whole lot more on the black and gold. We're going to take a break, be back with more as we get ready for the Matt McMahon Show. Stay tuned right after this on WWL. Closing down shop here on this Monday edition of Sports Talk, getting ready for the Matt McMahon Show coming up next right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Doing a quick check-in on the LSU baseball game against Nichols. The Tigers have a 5-1 lead over the Colonels, and entering the bottom of the fourth innings. We got a home run from the Bear Jones, hitting a solo shot on the night. We'll keep you updated throughout the program as we get ready for the Matt McMahon Show now here on WWL. Tomorrow, we're going to be getting into even more of the combine. Zach Nagy of LSU Tigers on SI will also join us, and Ryan Roberts from A to Z Sports giving you all things NFL Combine, plus a preview of number two LSU baseball's first big test of the season against number 18 Dallas Baptist with D1 baseball writer Aaron Fitt. See you later, folks. Have a good night.